Marie Bernard, and today we are speaking with Carly Pollock. She's the author of Feed Your Soul, Nutritional Wisdom to Lose Weight Permanently and Live Fulfilled. Carly is the author of Feed Your Soul, and she's also the founder of Nutritional Wisdom, which is a thriving private practice in Austin, Texas. She's a certified clinical nutritionist with a master's degree in holistic nutrition, and she's been awarded Best Nutritionist in Austin 5 years running and has helped over 10,000 people achieve their health and happiness goals. Her website is carlypollock.com. Welcome to the show, Carly.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk.
Thanks for being with us. So can you tell us a little bit about your own journey and struggles with eating healthy and body image and kind of what led you to write Feed Your Soul?
I feel like my journey is really typical of many of the experiences that many women have, which is that I didn't really notice or care much about my body until I went through puberty. And at that time, I had gained a little bit of weight, as most young girls do. And, you know, also at the perfect age where we are, you know, obsessed with fitting in and really starting to ask the question, who am I? We start to like boys or girls. And, you know, really it starts to heighten this idea of what do others think of me? And, you know, what is my body telling the world? And at the same time, I struggled with really severe anxiety. So that coupled together and me being able to use food to comfort and gaining weight, and then the food that I use for comfort, gaining even more weight. So then becoming obsessed with my body and then trying every diet under the sun, some sane, some absolutely insane, you know, and then fast forward to being a college graduate and looking back and saying, wow, I have really had an obsessive relationship with food and really poor body image for over a decade now, and dieting isn't working, so I have to try something else.
So what was it that made you decide to become a clinical nutritionist?
You know, I think it was really for selfish reasons. I mean, part of it was I was always fascinated with food. I had scratch and sniff food stickers. I loved cartoons that I love Ninja Turtles because they ate pizza. I mean, really from a young age, I was always, you know, just fascinated and very into food. And I was also blown away by the concept that you could use food to manipulate your health. And that, you know, that's obviously a little later in life, but when it came to going to school and deciding what I was going to study, that was the thing that I was most passionate about, is wow, you could move your body in a certain way, and depending on what you put in your body, you're going to feel good or not. And in fact, I started with my undergraduate, I went to GW, and I started as a kinesiology undergrad and an exercise physiology major. And it was a year into my study that I realized it really doesn't matter how you move your body. If you're putting crap into your body all the time, you're not going to be healthy. And that point, I changed my major to nutrition.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that, Carly. Now, your book, Feed Your Soul, is really a lot about the inner work, not so much about what you're eating specifically. So why is it important to do the inner work first?
It's not only so important to do the inner work first, it's the only way to create permanent change. You know, I always say that our plate is a reflection of our inner state. But in the book, I create this really simple formula that people can use for the rest of their lives when they're trying to shift a behavior. And the formula is that our thoughts create our emotions, and our emotions are what drive us to behave a certain way. And so no matter what the behavior is, whether you want to quit smoking or drink more water or go to sleep earlier or stop procrastinating, when you look at that behavior, I want you to plug it into the formula. I'm behaving a certain way because I'm feeling a certain way, and I'm feeling a certain way because I'm thinking something. Whether that thought is conscious or subconscious, and I go over the three levels of thought in the book, regardless of what level of thought or story you have, that is always the root cause of what's driving the behavior. And I feel like diets, while I'm not anti-diet, diets without a deeper spiritual practice are just absolutely chaotic and really set you up to fail, because they just concern themselves with behavior modification. Every diet has a list of to-dos. Eat this, don't eat that. Move this way, drink this. And it's all about modifying behavior without taking a look at what ultimately is driving that behavior. And so we go on a diet, we can eat healthy for a certain period of time. But then after, you know, after some sort of trigger, we go into our default behavior, which is usually to eat out of stress, boredom, fear, frustration, depression, and so on.
Mm-hmm. But it's, so it sounds like you're saying that you need to focus on your emotions first, but if we modify our behavior, can't that also help us change our emotions? For example, if we're having depression, maybe one of the things contributing to the depression is that we're eating pizza and ice cream all day instead of giving our body and brain the fuel it needs to not feel like crap.
That's a great point. And I completely agree that you ideally would do both at the same time. You know, you have two schools of thought, this idea of only focus on the diet. So you have your, you know, Whole 30 and your cleanses and your juice cleanses, and all they do is talk about the behavior modification. And then you have this other school of thought, which is, you know, it's not about food. Get happy, just focus on being happy, and you'll want to eat a salad. And I think that you need a mixture of both. I can't just burn sage around myself and lose the weight. And I also can't just keep a food log and count calories and lose the weight. I want to address the mind, body, spirit at the same time. Body meaning the logistics of what you talk about, you know, putting yourself on some sort of protocol. I call them loving boundaries, because rules make me want to rebel, but giving some set of loving boundaries to your body. But then as you're on that protocol or diet, you make sure that you're looking at the deeper emotional work, because when you do look at that every day, and I'm sure we'll talk about ways that you can, there's no end to what you can learn about yourself. And really then your plate starts to teach you so much more than what we think, so much more than I'm lazy or I'm motivated, but really your plate can be your top spiritual teacher.
Hmm. So Carly, I'm wondering what your opinion is, but it seems like I know that a lot of people who have struggled with their weight have gone through this cycle where they'll work really hard and they'll lose a bunch of weight and feel really great, and then something will happen and it all falls apart and they gain the weight back. And some of that can be due to lowering metabolism through calorie restriction, but a lot of it has to do with emotions and how the weight loss wasn't the change we thought it was going to be. So can we talk a little bit about what you've seen with your clients in that area?
I remember, you know, when that research first came out about diets, you know, it was, I don't know the percentage, so I'm going to just make it up, but it was something like, you know, over 90% of people who diet gain the weight back, partly because the metabolism slows due to calorie restriction. And although there is a piece of that science that is true, I really felt like that was such a hit for people, you know, for hopeful people looking to make permanent change, because the way the mind works is it's always trying to prove, you know, that story to be true so that it convinces us, you know, we don't even have to try. So I felt like so many people, when they learned of that, were like, oh, see, you know, I'm, you know, darned if I do, darned if I don't. Mm-hmm. You know, if I diet, I'm just going to lose the weight back. And if I don't diet, I'm never going to lose the weight. And that new piece of research really left people super hopeless, and also an excuse for so many people to go, well, diets are horrible. See, I told you. And that's why I'm just going to eat what I want. I feel like that's just not the whole piece of the story. And, you know, I'm not a fan of extreme calorie restriction, and that's really what that research was talking about. But, you know, my clinical experience, having seen tens of thousands of clients in over a decade in private practice, which I wanted to give it that much time before I wrote the book, because I really didn't want to write the Carly book. I feel like so many people write, here's the diet that worked for me, and then it's going to work for everybody. And that's why we have so many diet books out there. And if you just happen to be the person that is the same body type and has the same background, then it works for you. But if you are someone of natural vegetarian descent and you pick up a paleo book, then you're going to feel horrible. Or if you try keto and you have a thyroid issue, it, you know, you're not going to lose weight and be super frustrated while everyone around you is telling you how much weight they lost. So, you know, for me, it was really important to write a book that wasn't about a specific diet, but that taught people how to find the right diet for them and also armed them with the mental tools so that they could achieve anything that they wanted for their health and to really make that change permanent. But to answer your question more specifically, I think that if you do the mind work that I explain in the book, that the details about, you know, macronutrient ratio, do I eat low carb, high carb, low fat, or calorie restriction, you know, should I intermittent fast, or am I going to gain the weight back, that you find this balance that does not feel neurotic or chaotic and really intuitively feels like to you, oh, okay, this is the right path. This is the first time I felt like I was doing something that, you know, wasn't going to show up in some weird study to cause consequence later on. And so I don't give into that hype that that people gain the weight back, that, you know, diet, for so to speak.
Thank you. Right now, we are speaking with Carly Pollack. She's the author of Feed Your Soul, Nutritional Wisdom to Lose Weight Permanently and Live Fulfilled. I've been through my own weight loss and weight gain struggles, and I know that the first time I really lost a significant amount of weight, one of the things that I noticed was that I suddenly started getting all this attention from guys, and I felt really resentful because I was like, well, where were you 80 pounds ago? You know, that just because now I look differently on the outside, I'm getting treated differently, and I didn't expect to feel resentful, but I did. Have you seen that happen?
Yeah, you know, it really just depends on what that meant to you. You know, every situation in life, I believe, is neutral. It's our story around it that makes it a positive or negative experience. It seems to me that your story was, hey, I was good enough at, you know, 80 pounds heavier, but now I'm getting all this attention. So, you know, what gives? Or the expectation that the people giving you attention should be spiritually evolved enough to, you know, see you for the bright, you know, light that you are despite weight. But that story for you ultimately will cause suffering, because here you are, you've lost the weight you want to celebrate, and then you find yourself feeling a negative emotion around your weight loss because of something external of you or something that you cannot control. And so for me, the way I would change that story is just, you know, send the people who are giving you attention love, because you know that, you know, they weren't conscious enough before to see you for the light that you are, and just continue to celebrate your weight loss instead of making it feel like, you know, how dare you give me this attention now and you didn't give it to me before? Because I just wouldn't want you to spend even 1 minute feeling negative around something as positive as your amazing transformation.
Thank you. That's really helpful advice. So let's talk a little bit more about this mind work that we need to do to really feed our soul.
The mind work, when I say mind work, my opinion of this all is that this game of weight loss, this game of health, hormone balancing, whatever it is you're looking to achieve to get to your ultimate level of vitality, this is 10% logistics, which is all of the stuff you need to do, how much water you need to drink, cooking your foods, all the produce you need to eat, how you exercise, sleep, etc. 10% of this is logistics, and 90% of this is mind work, which is, you know, being able to rise above the incessant mental stream and chatter in your mind and being able to separate the higher self thoughts from the lower self thoughts and really take control of the mind. This way, you know, my main goal for myself and for everybody listening is that you wake up and you have an authentic desire day after day to do the right thing. Not that you're doing the right thing because you fear some sort of consequence, or because you have a vacation or reunion coming up, or because you put on your jeans this morning and they didn't fit you, or you had muffin top and you said, oh, that's it, I have to do the right thing. You know, I want you to wake up and get excited where you wake up and go, ooh, I have another day and another opportunity to think loving thoughts and put good food into my body and drink, nourish my cells with fresh, purified water. And that's really hard for people. We tend to only want to do healthy things for ourselves when we've hit some sort of pain threshold. And the pain threshold is different for everybody, but anyone listening will know exactly what theirs is when I explain this. It's that point that you get to where you cannot take it one more second. So it could be as light level as putting on your pants, like I said before, and even your, you know, largest size pants don't fit and you go, that's it, I'm going on a diet tomorrow. And so that's your pain threshold. For somebody else, it could be as serious as, you know, they have diabetes and they go to the doctor and the doctor said, I've been telling you for years to stop the sodas. Now we need to amputate your leg. I mean, I know my own father has diverticulitis. He has all of these digestive issues and he's about to have serious surgery where they're removing a piece of his colon and he wants to go out and eat ribs. And so, you know, his pain threshold is much different than somebody else's, but everybody has one. And as soon as you hit that pain threshold, you'll notice you are super motivated to act. And then you act and you move towards pleasure. And what happens to that pain threshold? It goes away. But that's the very thing that was motivating you. And so most people never achieve their ultimate level of health and vitality, but they pendulum swing back and forth from their pain threshold, so where they're really suffering, and then all the way to where they have a little bit of relief and they start to feel like they're on the road, but then they lose motivation and they go back to their pain threshold. And that's that just vicious pendulum swing that we can't seem to get out of, because once we start to do great things for our body, our thoughts change. And that's what I was saying before about thoughts drive emotions and emotions drive behavior. How many times have we said, oh, you know, I can eat this, I've been doing so well, or I deserve this treat, I've been good all week, I'm going to go out to dinner, or I'm going to eat these French fries. And because that change in thought went from, I have to do this, I need to feel better, to, oh, I could eat this, I already feel good, is why we can be doing really well and be losing weight or feeling more balanced, and then we fall right off.
Thank you. Can we talk for a little bit? It sounds like you've already been touching on this without using the words, but the difference between willpower and discipline.
We use willpower and discipline as synonyms typically, but I feel like they are so far apart from each other. I believe that discipline comes from an energy of love, that I can look at a food and say, you know what, I love this food, I love how this food tastes, but I love myself more, and this is not the right time for me to eat this food based on the clarity I have about this vision for ultimate health. And so I'm going to abstain, or I'm going to walk away, or I'm going to change my, you know, interrupt my pattern and focus on something else. And when people use discipline, they'll notice that they feel good about it. They feel empowered after the situation has presented itself and, you know, come and gone. They're really, there's a pat on the back. They feel really good about the decision they made. Whereas willpower, the energy comes from fear. It's like, oh, I really want this food, but I want to fit in, I want to look good at the bikini at the pool party on Friday, or, but I have that wedding coming up and I really don't want to wear Spanx or whatever that is. And then we have this kind of chaotic, should I eat it? Oh, I don't want to eat it, but oh, I really want it. And then even if we wind up not eating the food, so on the outside, it looks like we've won. There's this energy about it. It's like, we're not happy about it. We feel restricted. We have a story about feeling punished. And then 3 days later, we overeat something else as this kind of unconscious rebellion. And the real takeaway between willpower and discipline is that it really does matter the energy you bring to eating, just like the energy you bring to your day. I mean, we can all go through the motions and have a day where we go to work and we answer our emails and then we come home and have dinner and sit on the couch and go to bed. But the energy, it's like doing that with this feeling of presence and awareness and love and gratitude and enjoyment and enthusiasm versus doing that with a, like, a, you know, just counting the days until Saturday hits. And the day looks the same from the outside, but from the inside, I mean, it's a totally different life experience. And that's what I mean by us needing to practice more discipline versus feeling like we're in the trap of willpower.
Mm. Thank you, Carly. Can you maybe share one little exercise that we can do to shift our mindset into that discipline and self-love rather than fear-based willpower?
Yes. So there's so many.
What's one of your favorites?
So one of my favorites is the way that I show up to resistance. And resistance and discipline kind of go hand in hand. Everyone is going to come up to resistance every single day when it comes to their health, because resistance shows up when you are up-leveling the quality of your life. And I don't know anything more than health that's going to, you know, up-level your quality of life, which means that whether you're starting an exercise program, you're on a food protocol, you're trying to, you know, balance or increase or improve your sleep or drink more water or start juicing or cook more of your meals, you are going to encounter resistance. And in order to push through, you need discipline. And my favorite tool is that every morning when I get up, I ask myself, Carly, where are you going to encounter resistance today? Because for the most part, we know our days. You know, we know how they're going to somewhat line up. So I visualize my day and I think, oh, you know, today meditation is going to be tough. So I bet you I'll have resistance there. Or, okay, I don't have a nanny right now. So I know cooking dinner, I'm going to feel that resistance. Or somebody listening might go, you know, I have a really long work day and I know I'm planning on that 6 p.m. yoga or exercise class, but I'm definitely going to feel resistance when I get in the car, where I'm just going to feel like I want to drive home. And resistance is that really uncomfortable feeling right before we're about to make a decision that, again, is going to up-level our health. So my tool is I visualize and I guess where this resistance is going to come, and then I visualize moving past it, and I make an actual plan to push through. Because if you don't go looking for resistance, it's going to come around and bite you in the butt. It's going to surprise you. And before you know it, it's 9:30 p.m. and you're sitting on the couch going, how did today fall apart? And, you know, you've eaten an entire bowl of popcorn for dinner and you're just like, what? How did this happen? I woke up in the morning with so much, you know, hopefulness around today being healthy. So I really challenge you every morning when you get up to go looking for that resistance. And then when the moment comes and it feels uncomfortable, you can say these words, which I say to myself every day. This is what discipline feels like. Because we are so wired for fight or flight that anytime we feel uncomfortable, our default is to fight or flight, to basically avoid pain at all costs. But we know that, as you know, that the short-term pain we feel or resistance, if we push through it, we have massive long-term pleasure as a result. And so even if it's for me, when the alarm goes off, to get out of bed right away and not press snooze, maybe the night before I say, I better plan this the night before because I'm going to hit resistance very first thing tomorrow. That is the tool that helps me push through and exercise my discipline muscle on a daily basis.
Thank you. That sounds very similar to something I heard from Dr. Joe Dispenza. I'm wondering if you're a student of his.
I have read one of his books, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. Is that him?
That is him, yeah.
But actually, I learned about resistance from Stephen Pressfield, and he wrote the book, The War of Art.
Oh.
And the book was originally for authors, people who write. And he was talking about, you know, you're going to encounter resistance. But then he talks about in the book that he realized once he started writing this book that this wasn't just for authors. This was for everybody, because every human encounters resistance when they're trying to improve their life in some way. But yeah, I wonder if Joe and Stephen are besties.
I don't know. Well, regardless, it seems like a really valuable tool.
Are you looking for a volunteer opportunity that fits your schedule? Being a big sister takes less time than you think, and you can choose the volunteer opportunity that fits your life. Spend just 1 hour a week as a study buddy, tutor, or 2 hours a week as a big sister. Check out the various mentoring programs at Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland and find a volunteer position and a little sister that will suit you to a T. Visit bigsisters.bc.ca for more information today.
We are the UBC Musical Theater Troupe. We aim to provide the joys of musical theater to everyone on campus.
Whether it be by participating in our productions, joining our band, or working backstage, we welcome all levels of experience.
Check us out on Facebook for more information.
525,600 minutes. We are speaking right now with Carly Pollack. She's the author of Feed Your Soul, Nutritional Wisdom to Lose Weight Permanently and Live Fulfilled. And you can find her at carlypollack.com. So we've been talking about discipline. I really love the idea of going over your day. I feel like I need to develop discipline just to even do that. And there's so many things that we could be doing to prime ourselves for a better day. Where do you think is the best place to start? Or do you have a tip on how to, like, are you lying in bed when you go through your day? How did you get yourself into the habit of doing that exercise?
Well, the truth is, just like you said, and I'm sure so many of us, if not every single one of us, have had this experience where I call it like we want to.
Yeah.
You know, I really want to be that person that journals, or I want to be that person that asks the question about resistance, but I have resistance just figuring out where my resistance is. And, you know, if you are one of those people right now where you're just finding it so hard to take action on anything regarding health, and you're in the mode where you just want to have that authentic desire to do it, then I say start by thinking about or writing out your vision. And yes, you have to start somewhere where you just rip off the Band-Aid and you get in. Usually starts by getting inspired. And once you're inspired, and hopefully this conversation inspires many of you, but once you get inspired, just know you have about a 5-minute window to where your mind will start talking you out of taking that massive action. So a piece of this is, when you find that you're triggered by inspiration, then I'd like you to do this very thing first, which is write down a vision of ultimate health for you and make it in the present moment, and visualize it so that if I threw it up on a movie screen, it almost looked like the trailer to your future life. So I remember my very first vision, because I struggled so much with yo-yo dieting and therefore my weight yo-yoing, that I had so many different sizes of jeans. I had, you know, probably 4 different sizes. And then I remember just the pain I felt of going into the closet. And, you know, first I would get on the scale, and the scale would tell me whether or not I was allowed to be happy that day. And if that didn't do it, then I would go into the closet, and based on what pair of pants I was choosing. So if it was a day where, you know, I had to choose the elastic waistband pants because even my jeans were tight, or I had to put on the dress because I didn't even want to wear pants, it was like, that was going to be a bad day. But I always felt like the closet gave me a little bit of anxiety because, you know, depending on where I was in my body, only a certain amount of clothes in my closet were available to me. So my very first vision was that I wake up And then I walk into the closet and I pick out a pair of, you know, for me, that was size 28 jeans, which was my goal. And they were a pair of black jeans with rips in the knees and ankle, you know, ankle jeans. And I put them on right out of the dryer and they fit. And it was, they were smooth, you know, going on. And I felt really proud that every pair of jeans in my closet was one size, because it had been that long that I had lost the weight, that I felt very confident that all of my clothes were one size. And that was my very first vision. And you can visualize me going and putting on black pair of pants, holes in the knees, you know, it was very, very specific. And then I remember my next vision was that I was walking down the beach and my hair was, you know, flowing and the sun was kissing my face and I had a bikini on and I looked down and all I could see were boobs. Couldn't see stomach, and I just like, that was just this vision for me. And you make a new vision as you achieve the original vision you've created. You know, we've all heard it before that you have to know the outcome. You have to know where you're going in order to stay motivated and, you know, be inspired to do those things that sometimes feel hard to do. So if someone is feeling a lack of motivation, your biggest takeaway from hearing this is that clarity creates motivation. The more clear you are, the more motivated you will be. And, you know, something I will talk to my clients about when they're struggling, let's just use the example of they're struggling with sugar, as so many of us do. And they're going, oh man, I can't go a day without eating sugar. And I say to them, okay, what if every single day that you went sugar-free, I gave you $20,000 tax-free, and you know, you could do whatever you wanted with it. But at the end of the week, if you went 7 days without sugar, you'd have $140,000. And think about what that would be at the end of the year and how different your life would be. And maybe you only wanted to do it one day a week and they go, oh, that wouldn't be hard at all. Are you kidding me? $20,000? Because in the same vein, when you think about gaining that $20,000, you also think about paying $20,000 for a cookie. Because that's what you'd be doing. If you ate the cookie, you lose that 20 grand. So imagine walking into a coffee shop and deciding, you know, you're going to pay 20 grand for one cookie. And they go, oh, that wouldn't be hard at all. I could go a year and then I could retire and live the rest of my life, you know, with a house in Hawaii and a house here. And all I did was create clarity. That's all I did, was make them crystal clear on what their decision was. Now, I know $20,000 is not what happens when we don't eat sugar, but our health is what happens, our quality of life. If we don't have, you know, the fact that maybe for the first time in our lives since puberty, we feel, you know, in control, empowered, and confident about what we see in the mirror, or we're excited to go bathing suit shopping or suit shopping or dress shopping or whatever it is. And so clarity really creates motivation. If you are not motivated right now, you need to get really clear on what you want, why you want it, what will become available for you in your life when you do receive this thing, or what would be blocked from you forever if you don't achieve this.
Thank you, Carly. I'm curious what tips you have on dealing with peer pressure, because that comes up as soon as we start to do a little bit better with our way of eating. A holiday comes up, a family event, a wedding, something where other people are around putting in their two cents about how we're eating and pressuring us to eat the same things they're eating so that they feel better about what they're eating. What advice do you have for us?
A few things. One, I would say, don't deny other people their lesson. I remember I was dating a man at the time for many years, and his mother was obese. And she was an extremely nice lady and I loved her. But every time we would spend time together, I felt really uncomfortable because I felt like, oh, your son is dating the nutritionist and, you know, here she is ordering burgers and fries and I'm ordering a salad with no cheese and whatever, you know, and croutons, take the croutons off, and how uncomfortable that must make her. So I remember when I was first, you know, spending time with her and I wanted her to like me, I would find myself ordering unhealthy food or ordering the same thing that she ate, or if she ordered apps, eating the apps, because I didn't want her to think I was like a prissy, snobby nutritionist, and I didn't want her to feel bad about herself. And I'm sure you would agree with me that the worst feeling possible is when you betray yourself. Like, self-betrayal is the worst feeling, so much worse than when somebody else betrays you. But when you betray yourself in that way, where it was like, I wanted the salad, but I actually ate the nachos because I wanted to make her feel better. It just felt so, so horrible. And so I started to realize, I'm never going to judge or preach to others how they should eat. There's actually a famous quote, preach not to others how they should eat, but eat as becomes you and be silent. And I decided that I was going to just do what was right for me and not deny her her lesson. If she felt uncomfortable around me, then that's on her. And maybe that gets her one step closer to looking at her own stuff so she can get healthy. Or maybe she becomes inspired by me. Or maybe it strikes up a conversation where, you know, I can help her in some way. But either way, you know, succumbing to peer pressure not only doesn't teach that other person their lesson, but you betray yourself and it feels horrible. And the other thing I would say is you have to have stuff ready, meaning not food, but like stuff ready to say to people so that you don't get stuck in that situation where you go to happy hour and you've made the intention and decision that you're not drinking. And then your colleague comes up to you and goes, oh, let me buy you a drink. And you go, no, I'm okay. And they go, oh, come on. You know, it's like, if you are not ready for that moment, then absolutely, it would be far easier for you to succumb to peer pressure. And so, you know, usually I try to bring humor into it because you always want to keep it light. You don't want to go, Jim, it seems that you have an alcohol problem. And, you know, I'm going to say no to this. And now I'm feeling quite uncomfortable. How about you? It's like nobody wants to do that. And so I usually try to take humor into it. For example, let's say I have, you know, someone trying to get me a drink. I'd say, no, grab me a seltzer and lime. I promise you, I'm just as funny with seltzer. Or, you know, I promise you, I won't judge you. Like, I'm still the life of the party. Or, you know, you have a free designated driver. Don't complain. And so, like, something a little cheeky, but still being forceful. And if you're in a situation where it's family or, you know, you want to be respectful and someone's like, you go to someone's house, it's their grandmother. She's like, I made this cake just for you because in 1995, you said you liked it on your Facebook page and I'm not letting you grow into a new identity. And they're like, okay, here's this. And then you go, oh my goodness, thank you so much. This is so fantastic. You know what? I really want to wait till I'm hungry and I'm going to take this home and devour it later. You know, is that okay? And they go, oh yeah, sure, sure. And then you make sure you text them later and tell them how delicious it was. In this way, a white lie, a truly harmless, like, hey, I'm going to eat this later. And then you give it away, throw it out, do whatever you need to do, is the only time I would recommend that somebody ultimately not be truthful, because you don't want to hurt the other person, but you also don't want to hurt yourself. And believe me, there have been times where I've said, oh, I can't drink, I'm on antibiotics, because everybody shuts right up then and there.
Interesting. Thank you. And it sounds like it goes back to your exercise of looking at the resistance in the morning. If you know that you're going for happy hour after work, then you can plan in advance for what people are going to say if you're only drinking club soda.
And I do, you know, especially when it's friends, I will also put the intention out there before I even go to create accountability where I'll need it. You know, let's say I'm going out to a dinner with friends later and I don't want that to be one of my two free meals per week, because we can talk about this, but I give myself two free meals per week. And let's say I want to eat healthy and I know when I'm there, I'm going to be tired and I'm going to smell the food and see the food and I'm not going to feel good about my decision if I leave the restaurant and feel like I've succumbed to in the moment kind of what I want now versus what I want most for my health, then I will use my friends in the way of, you know, allowing them to be there for me with accountability. Let's say I group text everybody and say, hey, I can't wait for dinner tonight. Just FYI, I really want to eat clean tonight. I already looked at the menu. I'm ordering this. you know, don't think I'm ridiculous that I'm texting you now. I just want accountability. So please feel free to make fun of me if I like then go to order the chips and queso or whatever it is. You know, I'm in Austin, so I keep saying nachos and chips. We like Mexican food here. But, you know, and just putting it out there. Let's say you're going to visit family. You send an email, hey, I'm so looking forward to seeing everybody. I just want to let you know I'm on this specific protocol that I'm, you know, and I don't want you to feel put out. Please, like, I'm dairy free or I'm gluten free. And I don't want you to have to manipulate the food at all. I will manipulate. I just want to put it out there so that, you know, there are no surprises and I really want to feel supported. I tell you that when you ask for support beforehand, people actually who love you feel honored to step up and say, oh, wow, totally, I'm going to go out of my way and support you. But if you don't ask for it, they may act in their default, which is to come from fear or to come from kind of like a misery loves company sort of thing. Like, oh, come on, you were more fun when we would eat late night on the couch. So I just say, put out there what you want before you get into the situation, because the people who love you will surprise you. They will step up. They'll support you and it'll feel really great.
Thank you. That's a really helpful shift in perspective of, rather than going and being like, no, I can't have this, I can't have that, asking for support in advance and talking about more of your vision, like, this is what I want for myself, rather than this is what I'm not allowed to have for myself.
Correct.
Thank you. So can we talk a little bit about these two free meals?
Yes. You know, there are a few huge reasons why diets don't work long term. But one of them, and probably the biggest one, is that diets create scarcity around food, because we make this list of foods that are not good for you and they're bad for you and you're bad if you eat them. And it just creates this feeling of scarcity. When you think about scarcity, the first thing I think about around food is Thanksgiving. Because we take these foods that we all love, stuffing and pumpkin pie and dressing, and we love them, but we've decided for some crazy reason we can only eat them once a year. It's, you know, if you eat the pumpkin pie in February, it's just totally inappropriate. It's just so weird. And so what we do is, because we can only eat them once a year, they become scarce to us. So we binge when we have the opportunity to eat them. Or if you're on vacation and you're in, you know, Italy or something, and you go, oh, when will I be back to have this gelato? So we eat gelato three times a day. And this feeling of scarcity really drives us to overeat. And so the opposite feeling of scarcity is abundance. And making this food abundant, meaning that I can eat this whenever I want, but I choose not to, or I choose to only eat it at certain times, is the way you create permanent change. So how I do this is I give myself two free meals per week, not days, but just two meals where I eat whatever I want. I allow the foodie in me to take control and I don't overeat. So I still am in my practice of conscious eating, which I dedicate an entire chapter to the book, in the book. And but I do eat what I want. So last week I had Chinese food with my husband. It was our first date in a million years since we've had our baby. And we went and had greasy Chinese food. And my other free meal was French fries. I actually had a healthy dinner, a salad, and then I ordered fries. And I tend to do that where I order a salad and fries, and the fries is the free meal because I love French fries. And the rest of last week, every single thing I put in my mouth was nourishing, alive. It had nutrition for me. It was, you know, the cleanest, most unprocessed food. But then I had French fries and Chinese food last week. And imagine, me telling you, hey, I've lost all of my weight. I'm in the most peak condition of my body that I could be in. But I had Chinese food and French fries last week. And this week I might have pizza and, you know, cake. But it really works not to make any food off limits. And then if I have a food craving, which happens, you know, every single day, I can plan for it. And if I've already had my two free meals, I go, you know what, Carly, a brownie's not going extinct. It's going to be there for you next week. If you want it for your next free meal, you get it. And so there's this feeling of, I never say no to myself. I'm not like, no, that food's horrible. How dare you want that? You can't have that. It's, always a loving negotiation of, okay, well, you get two per week because that's the balance I've decided allows me to keep my ideal weight and health and vitality. And, you know, then I choose accordingly.
Thank you for that, Carly. I am curious, though, about people who have food sensitivities. Like if I eat, I eat mostly ketogenic. When I do allow myself to have treats, I get inflammation, and it's hard for me to get back on track. So, but I don't have like a major allergy or anything like that. Do you recommend people still have those free meals, or does someone with a bit of food sensitivity need to be extra cautious?
Yeah, so definitely the latter of being extra cautious. It really just depends since everybody's body is different. So for example, I really do not do well with dairy, as most Eastern European Jews do not. And when I have a free meal, it is pretty rare that I will eat dairy. And if I do, there's varying levels. Like if I went out right now and decided that my free meal was going to be a milkshake, I mean, I would be doubled over in pain. Mm. I might even poop my pants. And, you know, so you have to weigh the pleasure versus pain, you know, scenario and decide whether this free meal is really worth it. And there have been times where I've been on a strict protocol and the free meal changes. Like sometimes a free meal for me is going to this local place in Austin that does coconut milk ice cream. And, you know, it's still gluten-free, it's dairy-free, it's not fried, but it's a bunch of sugar. And so that for me is the free treat. Or when you're on keto, maybe the free treat is a high carbohydrate meal, but that is not violating any one of your food sensitivities. So you have some potato or two slices, you know, have a sandwich with two slices of gluten-free bread or something like that. And so I definitely do not recommend that people eat a free meal that then creates a, you know, crazy consequence. And it really, really has to be worth it. So I said, you know, I said before that maybe my free meal next week is pizza, but the truth is that I don't eat pizza unless I, you know, like I'm in New York City or I'm in a place that's like known for the pizza. And then if I have inflammation the next day or if I'm bloated the next day, honestly, sometimes as a foodie, I go, worth it. And I wake up and I drink my, you know, apple cider vinegar and I drink a ton of water. I have my celery juice or whatever that is. And I just get right back on track. And then sometimes it's not worth it. So it really just depends on what foods you love, how often you have them, how quickly you can, you know, put that fire out, meaning your inflammation, you know, how quickly your joint pain can go away or whatever that is. But yes, all in relation to where, what season you are as far as like, where is the health of your body?
Beautiful. And again, it's about the self-love. So you're not going, oh, I'm going to have this free meal at the expense of my well-being.
Correct. I mean, it's, I don't expect to feel fantastic after a free meal because usually it's foods that I don't eat all the time or fried foods or sugary foods. So I didn't feel great after the Chinese food and I certainly didn't feel great after the French fries, but it didn't put me in a world of hurt to where I couldn't recover within, you know, a couple of hours or 24 hours. I mean, there are some people, let's say you have celiac disease or you have Hashimoto's or thyroid issues that if you eat gluten, you know, for the next few weeks you are inflamed. And I certainly would never recommend that you be that destructive, you know, with your free meals. But I find that even people on the strictest diets can find a way to have meals that feel like the foodie piece of them is showing up instead of the, you know, is this nourishing to my body? You know, those foods are nourishing to the soul when you're allowed to just kind of get giddy about going out to a restaurant or that's just me. I'm a foodie. I mean, a lot of people probably would not need to take those free meals. But if you feel like you're a foodie, if diets make you feel restrictive, those free meals are the way that you create abundance.
Thank you, Carly.
This is my life. I wake up in the morning, I eat, I sleep, I
breakfast with the Browns.
So whatever it is, but I never shut it off for 5 minutes.
I can't wait. way to impress my friends with my astounding knowledge of cool.
Join your favorite Brownsters and tune in and listen to the best selection of down-tempo electropop lounge core.
Strictly Squaresville.
Remember, subtle, basic, brown.
Breakfast with the Browns
on CITR 101.9 FM every Monday morning
from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
The older I get, the more life starts to make sense, and the less I care.
Now we're riding the rainbow, the clouds big, and we're making it like young. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're making it like you. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're...
You know, you can give 100 examples of what it isn't, but you, man, you're going to have a hell of a time saying what it is.
Hey, what are you doing? You're procrastinating. What are you doing tonight? Netflix? Again? Looking to socialize? We got you. Looking for variety? We have that. Hong Kong Student Association. Your ticket in. We're more than just a club. Come find your home. HKSA. Get involved at www.hksaubc.com.
Up next is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific on CITR. So we are speaking with Carly Pollock. She's the author of Feed Your Soul, Nutritional Wisdom to Lose Weight Permanently and Live Fulfilled. This conversation has just flown by. We're almost at a time. So I'm wondering, Carly, what do you feel like is the one of the most important points that you want people to take home with them today?
You know, I want people to understand why what they've done in the past hasn't worked. And out of that, to create a lot of self-compassion. And instead of looking at what hasn't worked in the way of, oh, because I don't want it, or enough because I'm lazy, or because I have no willpower, or I'm a pig, or whatever our stories are that are so super judgmental, you start to understand, wow, if I've been only focusing on food and dieting and not my beliefs around food, my relationship with food, my stories about how I reward, how I numb, how I seek comfort, and I really start to understand how the mind works. Wow, this really hasn't been about what I thought it was. And now I can start to search for tools from a spiritual, mental, emotional perspective around food instead of chasing the latest fad diet. I can finally create balance, and then my physical body will be a reflection of how much I love and care about myself, not how hard I can diet or how much I can go without or restrict.
Thank you, Carly. You mentioned reward, and that is a big one. I feel like when I want to reward myself for something, it's almost always food. And it's challenging for me to think of a reward that isn't food related, because in our culture and in my own personal culture, it's always been the food.
You know, I don't want people to reward themselves with the very same thing that they're avoiding in order to get the reward. So in the way where it's like they've had a great week and they're losing weight, so they reward themselves with food because they're losing weight, because that cycle is very vicious and ironic, really, because you're like, you're avoiding the very thing that you're rewarding yourself with, and it gets very complicated. But I will say, you know, we know that the way the human mind works is we're only motivated by the anticipation of the reward. So it's not wrong to reward yourself. I mean, truly, that's how the mind works. If there was no reward, we wouldn't be motivated to act. No one goes to school unless they're anticipating the degree and really what the degree will create for them. No one goes to work unless they're anticipating the reward of helping others or making paycheck to have the life experiences or whatever that is. And so we need the reward. I just urge you to try to find a reward that doesn't have a consequence attached to it. So, you know, maybe sometimes food is the reward as long as that does not create a consequence. And once in a while, if you say, oh, wow, I've you know, done this really amazing project and I've worked so hard and it's over, let's go celebrate, let's go out to dinner. Well, if that's just one dinner, then that's not really going to create a consequence. And if you're really conscious and you really enjoy yourself, then, you know, that's the human experience. But if you do that all the time, or you're sitting on your couch by yourself, mindlessly eating, is it really a reward? Or is it just a pattern, and a pattern that has a consequence? You know, for me, I've had to, because my parents always rewarded me with food. And even we would go to the doctor, I would get a shot, so we would go get ice cream. Or if I got an A, we would, you know, it was always around food. And so I've had to really break free from that. And I love shopping, and I love clothes. So now it's like when I have a job well done, I'll typically go online or I'll go shopping and I'll buy myself something. Well, if I was in debt, or if I did not have the money, then going and buying myself something every time I do well as a pat on the back would have a consequence. Just like if we're trying to lose weight or our health is not where we want it to be, and every time we reward, we eat a food that gets us further and further from health, it's the same exact thing as somebody buying something for themselves when they don't have the funds. So I try to look at in my life, what is a way that I can kind of spread these rewards over, you know, over a breadth of areas. So it's like, can I buy myself something? Maybe I get a food treat. Maybe I plan a vacation. Maybe I take a day off. Maybe I send myself to the spa. And so I would urge you and everyone listening to write down a list of at least 10 different ways that you can reward yourself. And then put a star by the ways that you can reward yourself that would not have a consequence. And so maybe if you have a lot of money in the bank account, you go, you know, I could always buy myself something. And that really wouldn't have a consequence. Oh, but this food, you know, I'm trying to lose weight, so I'm definitely not going to put a star there. Sometimes the reward is giving. Hey, I did really well. I'm going to do something that makes me feel really amazing. I'm going to give my time or give my money, you know, some resource that I have, I'm going to give it to somebody else. And so I don't want people to get rid of the reward. It would be impossible. You would lose motivation to do anything because you wouldn't be able to anticipate the reward. But just make sure that it's not coming back to kicking the butt, because really that's no reward at all.
Oh, we could talk all day about this. That was so fantastic. Thank you so much, Carly. It has been such a pleasure speaking with you. We have been speaking with Carly Pollack. She is the author of Feed Your Soul, Nutritional Wisdom to Lose Weight Permanently and Live Fulfilled. Thank you so much to Carly for being with us today. And thank you for investing in yourself and spending this hour with us today. I hope that it has served you very well. I know it has served me well. Thank you for being with us. So much love to you. Namaste.
An enabled FM chip in your smartphone can make the difference in an emergency situation by allowing you to still hear critical updates. It will also let you listen to the local FM station using 3 times less battery and 20 times less data than streaming. Visit Free Radio